Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to Generation Y ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible. Starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
There are days like today where I am just too busy to get outside and go feed myself. And that's where DoorDash comes in. It's super convenient and they bring the food to me. Also, I don't like paying delivery fees. So I have DashPass. DashPass is an exclusive membership from DoorDash that gets you unlimited $0 delivery fees on eligible orders and members-only deals and discounts, all for only $9.99 a month. DashPass actually pays for itself in two orders on average. DashPass makes it easy to save at restaurants, grocery stores, and all your local favorites. Open the door to $0 delivery fees and savings you can't get anywhere else. Sign up for DashPass today only on DoorDash and get your first 30 days free if you're a new member. Subject to change, terms apply.
Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app to listen ad-free.
From Wondery. How you doing tonight, Aaron?
I'm doing good, Justin. How are you feeling though?
Well, at the time of this recording, which is the 9th of January, I'm still recovering from COVID. I think I got the Megatron, so it's been going around like wildfire.
Well, you do sound better tonight, so that's good.
Yeah, it's been a rough week, and anyone that says that Omicron. Anyone that says Megatron is mild, well, let's just say that it's less severe. It's not mild by any stretch of the imagination.
In other words, you wouldn't wish COVID upon anyone.
Well, there's a couple people I would, but we won't name them.
Now, you have an announcement to make, right? Aside from having COVID?
Yeah. Anyone out in the Colorado area, Colorado Springs and Denver, February 10th, I'm going to be at the Goat Patch Brewery, Colorado Springs. February 11th, Breckenridge Brewery. February 12th, Infinite Monkey Theorem in Denver. And then February 13th, it's called Grandma's House. It's not your grandma's house. It's a place called Grandma's House. Go out to Eventbrite, do a search for True Crime or Generation Y in those locations, and you'll find tickets available through Cult Crime and Cabernet, True Consequences, and True Crime IRL. We'll all be up there doing a live show.
Also, we don't mention this enough, but we do have a Patreon page, and I think many of you would be interested. We just put up some great episodes. One involves a UFO that I guess you could say landed in Kansas back in the 70s, where we talk about that. There's also a case of a mother who was accused of killing her daughter by her young son. So you might want to go out to Patreon, sign up, and check out those episodes.
Yeah, I think the UFO one's pretty interesting and fun if you need a break from murder and mayhem.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk, It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500.
This episode is brought to you by June's Journey. Unleash your inner sleuth and step into the glamorous 1920s. Uncover scandalous family secrets and solve the mysterious murder of June Parker's sister. With dazzling hidden object scenes and riveting storylines in each chapter, June's Journey invites you to a thrilling era of mystery and romance. And now, June needs your help, detective. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. Your adventure awaits.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So tonight's case, Aaron, is kind of a doozy. There's a double murder that happens at a funeral home, and let's just say that the suspect in this case, no one would suspect the person in this case. So with that, what are we talking about tonight, Aaron?
Tonight, we're talking about the February 5th, 2002 double murders of Dan O'Connell, who was a funeral home director, funeral home owner, and his intern, James Ellison. And like you said, the person that investigators wind up talking to about these murders is someone no one would have had on their radar.
So what do we know about these victims? Daniel O'Connell, he owned a funeral home. What else do we know about him?
Daniel O'Connell was born on February 23rd, 1962 in St. Paul, Minnesota. He had two brothers, Mike and Tom Jr., and a sister, Kathy. Now, this family lived in Hudson, Wisconsin, and during his senior year, Dan trained to become an emergency medical technician, and he started working with an ambulance service as an EMT and went all the way up to director of the St. Croix EMS. But really, this story has to do with his funeral home. And in 1985, Dan's father, Tom Sr., reopened the family funeral home, which had been closed for many years since the end of World War II. And in 1992, Dan graduated from the University of Minnesota with a degree in mortuary science. Dan was married to Jenny Jo McKnight, and he got married October 22nd, 1998 at St. Michael's Catholic Church. This was in Stillwater, Minnesota. They had two kids, Kyle and Caitlin, and it was in 1998 that Dan retired from working at Healthspan Ambulance to put all his efforts into the O'Connell family funeral home. He was a guy that was very involved in his community. He was an active member of the Hudson Chamber of Commerce, Noontime International Rotary Club of Hudson, the Knights of Columbus St. Patrick's, and the Hudson Booster Club. He also did fundraising for the Boy Scouts of America and the YMCA of Hudson, and was always seen at his kids' ball games, dance recitals, or school programs.
He sounds like a community organizer and an all-around pretty good guy. Yeah. I'm sure he knew everyone in the area, because anytime somebody dies, they have to come to him to have their loved ones buried.
He was a trusted man. People knew who he was. And I think that says a lot about his family business as well. James D. Ellison was born on October 22nd, 1979 in Minneapolis, Minnesota. He had two siblings, Jordan and Julia. They were from Barron, Wisconsin. That's about an hour northeast of Hudson. His past, well, he was involved in the school band, church activities, 4-H, Future Business Leaders of America, and he worked at Cellular One part-time, but eventually he transferred to the University of Minnesota and was set to graduate with a degree in mortuary science in May 2002, which is why from the year 2000, he was an apprentice funeral director at a funeral home in Barron. And a year after that is when he started interning at O'Connell Family Funeral Home. So this is what he wanted to do, and where better to go, right, than to work under Dan O'Connell.
So this all goes down on Tuesday, February 5th, 2002. I actually thought this was an older case, Aaron, but I was surprised when I saw the date on this. It was the middle of the afternoon, 1:40 p.m. The medical examiner came to the funeral home to sign some documents, death certificates. That's, you know, just regular business. And when he walked in, he found Dan shot to death at his desk. And he saw James, who was 22 at the time, shot also. He didn't know if he'd walked into an active crime, something going on. So he ran out of the building and immediately called the police, just in case the shooter or the murderer was still around. The police showed up, and they, of course, found the bodies of Dan and James, but no one else. Dan was sitting behind his desk when he was shot. He was shot in the head. James appeared to be fleeing the room, and the murderer shot him. Now, the police think that Dan and the murderer got into an argument, some kind of escalation, and then he was killed, and James just happened to be coming into the room, but he wasn't the target of the attack. He just happened to be an innocent bystander.
Dan O'Connell was buried on Friday, February 9th, 2002, at 11 in the morning. It was conducted at St. Patrick's Catholic Church, and his father and brother coordinated that funeral. He was then buried at St. Patrick's Church Cemetery in Hudson, Wisconsin. His gravestone has a three-leaf clover on it. James' funeral service was held at the Barron Area Community Center, and then he was buried at Wayside Cemetery in Barron, Wisconsin. And his headstone will be shared with his parents upon their deaths. So this is a shocking double murder because, again, this isn't the kind of place where these types of things happen. And these are definitely not the kind of people you would figure would ever be shot to death and at a funeral home. So this is very strange. One of the first questions that came up was, could this have been the result of a robbery? And so, of course, the police are looking into all possibilities. But, well, that's one of the things they came up with, was there possibly could have been a robbery motive here.
They're thinking maybe some teenage kids or somebody, as they put it, potheads, broke into the funeral home to steal embalming fluid. Now, back, you know, I won't even say back then, but a lot of people think that you could dip cigarettes or joints in embalming fluid. They would call it water, and that would get you more high. But in reality, I think you would use the embalming fluid to actually dissolve PCP or other types of drugs to dip your cigarette or joint into, and then you would have a PCP-laced joint. But would somebody go to a funeral home to steal embalming fluid? Because you can just buy that. You don't need to be a funeral home director or something to buy this chemical, and it's actually not that expensive. So it would be like somebody robbing a Home Depot to huff spray paint. Well, they could just go to a Home Depot and buy the spray paint. They don't need to do anything else. So they're not thinking that this is really panning out as a robbery situation. Plus, nothing was stolen.
They also looked into this cult known as Rest of Jesus. Apparently, they objected to embalming. And so the police wondered if that would be a motive to kill a funeral home director and his intern. But when they started investigating this cult, no one really impressed them as being capable of murder. They were described as harmless eccentrics.
I've heard about people that are just against embalming because they're all natural and they don't want the chemicals to go into the earth, but never something like that.
So as they conduct interviews, they're hearing strange rumors. And this one is a strange one, but there's a rumor that Dan and James had gone back to the funeral home and found someone in an explicit position with a body. But these, of course, are just rumors and nothing's really panning out.
So now we got some stray necrophilia
guy who killed them because, yeah, all right. I mean, what else do you have to go on when you have nothing? So I understand that they can have these ideas or these rumors, but yeah.
The other thing they do is they start looking into both James and Dan to see if they had perhaps a lover that was not known to most people or anyone, or if they had gambling debts, things like that. But, you know, when they looked into these guys, they couldn't find anything like that going on. So that didn't pan out either. So all told, it's said that the police interviewed about 1,800 people, and there was even a $100,000 reward for information. But that didn't bring any leads. You know, I mean, everything that was brought in just didn't work out for them. So they kept going back to zero. They couldn't find anything, any kind of lead that would explain what happened here. So it's a real mystery on why these two men were murdered. All they had really is, and you said this earlier, is that it appeared that there probably was an argument that broke out because of where Dan was at. He was sitting behind his desk. He was shot in the head. And then, of course, his intern must have come in and then tried to run out and was shot as well.
Now, it's not until 2004 that they get any kind of break in the case that hints to a suspect. But Detective Jeffrey Knops started working the murders, and he interviewed Thomas Smith. And Thomas originally claimed that there was a Father Ryan at the local church who had given him alcohol as a minor. But during the interview, it was apparent that Thomas was hinting that there was a lot more to this Father Ryan than just him giving him alcohol. So this begins to slowly tilt the investigation towards this Father Ryan. But this is a priest in a Catholic church. I mean, this is not your typical suspect. This is not somebody who you would just be like, oh, well, let's go round up all the priests in the neighborhood and see who committed this double homicide. This is somebody who is probably a leader in the community and people look up to them. And what would his motive be to kill some funeral directors?
Now, as they started interviewing these different students, some were hinting that there were issues with this Father Ryan, but when the parents would be interviewed, they would shut down. There was definitely some sort of protection around this priest from the people who attended his church. They didn't want to speak to detectives about him because they felt like they would put him at risk, and they didn't want that. And they also said, this is a respectable priest. We're not going to talk about anything like that.
They're devout Catholics, and they are devout to this man who they look up to.
So it's on November 11th of 2004 when Knops and Sean Petty, another detective, made the four-hour drive to go interview Ryan about these abuse allegations. And they started off by talking to him about the double murder simply because Ryan was living in Hudson at the time. And so Father Ryan starts talking about his theory about the murders. He thought that the mafia and the O'Connell family were in cahoots together and that the murders were part of a mafia hit. So this got the detectives asking Father Ryan Erickson how the men were killed. And Ryan offered, I think James was going through a door and out a door, and Dan was behind a desk. And they asked him, how many times were they shot? And he said, they were shot once, meaning they were both shot one time. Now, this is the thing. They had never publicly disclosed how and where these men were shot and killed. It was just released that they were killed with a gun.
So, Aaron, if anyone's ever being questioned by police and they ask you, how do you think this person was killed? Again, I'm glad people are stupid, but why would you even attempt to offer up details such as that? These detectives are really good at their job, and the person they're interrogating, not so smart, I guess.
Well, I think they're smart because they're working with his ego. Father Ryan Erickson had an ego, And so all they were trying to do is ask him, like, how do you think it went down? And because he knows how it went down, apparently, for Father Ryan Erickson, he thinks, oh, I'm really smart. I've got the info. They need to talk to me. I can help them. But the investigators are thinking, how the hell do you know that? Because it was never released.
So unless Father Ryan had an intimate conversation with the medical examiner who had walked in on the scene, then he wouldn't know these details. So at this point, these two investigators are like, I think we have our guy, because nobody else in all of the 18, you know, to 1900 interviews we've done was giving us any information such as this or knew any details about this case.
Well, they took it a step further. They asked him, how do you happen to know this? And he said, oh, I watch the local news. So yes. Now they want to know if he owns any firearms. And he said that he owned primarily shotguns, as well as 2 9-millimeter handguns. And, you know, if you read up on this case, one of the things that came out about it was Father Ryan spoke on shotguns, saying, I only used single shot shotguns because I guess he had a relative who told him, if you can't get your prey in with the one shot, you probably shouldn't be out hunting.
It's such a manly thing to say.
Right. So, of course, they're speaking with him and they see a globe that contains bottles of liquor and glasses. And, well, they had a number of young men had described exactly that.
The young men who had made the allegations would talk about him giving them alcohol and getting them drunk and then molesting them. And they described this glass fixture with glasses and bottles to a T. So that gave their stories some credibility.
So things are starting to come together. They don't know exactly why he would be the person to kill these two men, but everything is starting to line up.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly, or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. And immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements, I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better, notice things like your hair and your nails feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
December 7th, 2004, the detectives at the sheriff's office in Ladysmith, Wisconsin, which was halfway between Hurley and Hudson, met with Father Ryan Erickson to conduct another interview. And this time they really wanted to lay into him about his knowledge of the murders. And so when confronted, Ryan claimed that he had learned the details from another detective.
So his story's changing a little.
Yeah, it's like he's trying to adjust, but they know this isn't true. He was also asked if there were any meetings with Dan or his wife, Jenny. And Father Ryan replied, "The only meetings that I had with Dan were in the car because we were burying someone." So after this, they moved on to confronting him about the alleged sexual assaults. And here's where Father Ryan gets very particular and says, "I only gave alcohol to minors and I never abused anyone." But he did admit to lying down next to a juvenile boy. But he said, "I never touched him. I just told him it was natural to be aroused, that there was nothing wrong about that."
I don't know how this could come off as appropriate in any way, shape, or form. And a Catholic priest admitting giving juveniles alcohol, and he thinks this is okay behavior. And this is not during communion or anything. He's getting them drunk and hanging out with them outside of the church on their own personal time.
Well, forget about appropriateness. What about the fact that he's now giving ammunition to the police to keep gunning for him? Think about it. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, he's got this red flag. He's got this red flag. They're not letting this guy go. They're going to stay on him. And so they end up searching his car that he had driven to this interview. And inside the car, they found a 9mm handgun and a magazine in the trunk.
And this murder was committed with a 9mm handgun.
Obviously, the police, the detectives, they haven't told everyone about every conversation they had with Father Brian Erickson, but Father Ryan did confide in friends of his about these interviews and said that the questioning was very aggressive. And some of the questions were about possible affairs he may have had, both heterosexual and homosexual. And apparently, because they were naming names, the detectives had a good idea about the types of questions to ask him and about who he was involved with. But he maintained to everyone he spoke to that he had nothing to do with these murders.
Now, December 16th, 2004, local detectives searched St. Mary's Church, convent, and rectory looking for pretty much anything, information. They ended up taking 22 items, including Father Ryan's computer, his secretary's computer, a pair of shoes, and his Bible. I don't know why they took his Bible. Maybe he made notes in it. And when they went through his computer, they found a document labeled Last Will and Testament. So they're going to look at that, right, Aaron?
Yeah, and so this got the Hurley police chief concerned about Father Ryan, because at this point, knowing that the police are honing in on him, they were worried that Ryan may try to take his own life. And this will was dated November 15th. That was just the day after Ryan's first interview. And then it was again modified on December 8th, the day after the second interview. So what did this will say? Well, according to this police chief, in the will, he said he was at peace and talked about himself in the past tense.
We can get more into that will later, but it's very telling.
So the police made a request of Father Ryan. They asked if they could have his guns removed and given over to someone for safekeeping. And with Father Ryan's okay or blessing, his guns were handed over to Russell Lundgren, who was the deacon at St. Mary's. And this is where Father Ryan is telling the police that he has no intentions of hurting himself.
Even during one of the interviews, they were asking him, could you have done something like this? I mean, wouldn't you go to confession to let this guilt off of your chest? And Father Ryan would say, well, you can go to confession, but you'll always have the guilt, so you don't make the mistake again. And he says something to the effect of, I could never do something so heinous such as this. And if I did, I'd probably want to take my own life. And I don't want to commit suicide. I have no guilt. I have no problems.
Sunday, December 19th, 2004, at 7 a.m., Rodney Batiste, who was the St. Mary's janitor, saw something hanging from the iron railing of the fire escape at the back of the rectory. Now, at first, he thought it was a dummy because it could have been a joke. Father Ryan was known to be kind of a joker. He was the kind of guy that might hide somewhere and jump out and spook people, scare people, things like that.
but it's never a mannequin. It's never a dummy.
No. So a friend of his named Rick was heading down to get in his vehicle when he saw what he described as a body part on the ground. So he ran back to the rectory door and saw Rodney using a snowblower, and Rick yelled to him, "Father Ryan has killed himself." And Rodney replied, "No, that's just a dummy. He is always playing jokes on me," and continued his work. But Rick, who's like, okay, it's a joke now, it's not real, he actually went inside to find Father Ryan to tell him, "You need to take that down, it's not funny." But he couldn't find his friend, the priest. So once again, he went back, found Rodney, and together they went back outside. And when they saw the frost crystals on the ear of this not dummy, that's when they knew they were looking at a body. So they called the police. It was 8:20 in the morning when Father Ryan Erickson was pronounced dead.
Now, Father Ryan had left three letters, suicide notes, addressed to Rick, Tom, and Ryan's parents.
Yeah, Rick and Tom were two of his close friends.
The one addressed to Rick and Tom said, "Thank you for this weekend. It took my mind off at least the last few days," because they had all hung out that weekend and had some drinks and partied together. And he said, "I love you as brothers and will always appreciate your help, generosity, and love. Your families are wonderful, and I'm sure they will do great things in this terrible world. If you get back to Rome, please light some candles for my eternal rest." And he goes on to say, "I learned and I taught. I helped people and I hurt them, but I never killed anyone. My ego, my pride, my lust, my envy have always stopped me from being the best person I could be. I am tired with my love. Father Ryan, thank you for everything." "I never killed anyone" is what he puts in big bold letters in this note.
Right. And when he left this letter to his parents, it included similar verbiage. He definitely talked about how he was not a perfect person, that he had his flaws, but he also described the murder investigation as a turkey shoot and that the police wanted to hang it on someone, so they used character assassination to achieve their goal. And he went on to say, "I did not murder anyone. I did not kill Dan or James." And he explained his suicide as basically that he was just ready to leave the horrible world. It had, you know, he had grown weary of it and he was full of anxiety. And in that note, he claimed that none of my guns matched. No DNA of mine was found. No one saw me leaving the funeral parlor. The third note, we don't know who he left it to. We don't have that information, but he did leave these three letters.
And during this whole investigation, every time he would talk to the police, he would get more enraged, more agitated, and he would send out messages to his congregation telling them about this witch hunt, telling them about the pure evil of the police coming after him. So when he ends up dead by suicide, his followers, his congregation, they will blame the police department for pressuring him for these false allegations and forcing this man, you know, and causing his death.
So he had enormous support, really, not just from his parents, but many of his congregation supported him. Not all. There's actually an interesting point made after he had taken his own life. There was a lot of talk of how some of his supporters would not kneel when they were supposed to kneel in his church, and it's because they had issues with him. So it's not like no one would have ever suspected him. Some people didn't trust him. Some people didn't like his methods or the way he conducted mass. Some of this is sometimes blamed on his old ways, that he was a traditionalist. They call it pre-Vatican II, for those that know. But it was also strange because after he had taken his life, some thought that he was pushed into doing it by demonic liberals.
Oh. He had gained a lot of notoriety in his congregation and amongst his peers because he was that fire and brimstone kind of guy. He was very black and white about things. He people that didn't like him, it was because they felt like he was weird and erratic. He would often cry and shout during, you know, his sermons, but he never had much of a positive message. It was always fear God, don't sin, or you will burn in hell. And he always took a particular focus on the sin of masturbation, which I think that's weird myself. I don't know why somebody would choose that as their main point for every sermon is don't go home and masturbate. I personally see that as projection. Like that's probably something you're dealing with because I don't have a problem with it. But is this a thing, Aaron? Do priests like is I don't know. I've never been to church, so I don't know how this goes.
Well, I don't recall anything like that when I was involved in the Catholic Church many years ago. But I do know that when I was in Catholic high school, that there was one priest who ranted about masturbation at times, and it made his classes very uncomfortable. He was also known for smacking people on their hands with a ruler if they started to fall asleep or if they weren't paying attention to him. But he was considered the old school priest there. And I'd say a number of other priests that were at that school were a lot more progressive, you might say. They weren't so hung up on talking about masturbation or hitting people.
It just seems weird to me, but I don't have any context or frame of reference. So, yeah.
One thing we should say before we go on is there were rumors about Ryan. In fact, people said that when he was a teenager, there were women who were interested in him, but he would never reciprocate. He would never give them any attention. So many people knew from the time that he was a teen that he just wasn't interested in women. And so that stood out. Also, from a young age, he was definitely angling to become a priest. Whenever he was asked, what do you want to do with your life? He would tell them of how he was going to become a priest. So this was a long-standing goal of his. And so there's no question that, you know, this wasn't by accident. He went where he wanted to go.
But now that he's dead and this investigation is not closed because they're still trying to figure out who murdered these two. And then now they have a lot more openness from some of these teens who have now grown up about these allegations. And they're able to interview a lot more people and find out a lot more information and a lot more background about this Father Ryan Erickson.
Oh, and there were also people involved in the church or that were friends of his who were more open after his death because they didn't feel like they had to protect him anymore.
Yeah.
So that really helped the investigation. And they wanted to perform an autopsy on Father Ryan Erickson, as well as look into the circumstances surrounding his death. They weren't leaving anything to chance or to assumption.
Yeah, because if there are allegations against him, there could be some angry parents out there, and maybe they wanted this to look like he hanged himself.
And there were allegations by some of his supporters that he was murdered so that it would be easier to convict him in the minds of the public, because they thought if he had gone to trial that he would have been found not guilty, because they didn't feel like there was any evidence. They had what's called a closed John Doe hearing from October 3rd through the 5th of 2005. This was held in the St. Croix County Court. And according to reports, there were about 15 witnesses who testified, and they revealed a lot of the information contained in this case study. This really is an explanation for why Father Ryan Erickson would have murdered these two men. And to put it simply, it's because Dan O'Connell was going to confront this father about sexual abuse.
It sounds like he might have confronted this father about it, and this is how it ended.
Why shoot these two men with a 9mm handgun? This is actually one of the easiest things to answer, and it's because at virtually any time that you saw this father, he was armed. Even when he was conducting mass, he had his 9mm handgun tucked down around his waistline.
Wow.
It was on him at all times.
I don't know what you would need that during mass for, but hey, to each their own, I guess.
As we had talked about, there were all these reports that Father Ryan may have been abusing young boys. And during a psychological evaluation in seminary, Father Ryan Erickson admitted to having sexual contact with his 4-year-old male cousin when he was 6 years old. Other reports included in high school, when Father Ryan was on the wrestling team, he had tried to sexually assault one of his teammates when the boy was 15.
So the diocese that he's trying to get into is interviewing him and asking him these questions, and he's giving them this information, and they still let him in? Huh. Why even bother asking the questions, I guess?
Well, in the seminary. So, and that story, this man had said that he had fallen asleep and he woke up to Ryan groping him. Now, at the time, Ryan was several years older than this guy. There was also a teenage boy who knew Ryan. They were at a campground in the summer of 1992, and he went over to Ryan's trailer late at night. And Ryan told him some scary stories, told him about the devil. And when this boy became scared, Ryan started massaging him to calm him down. But he was massaging him, you know, with this young boy in the nude.
That's not how you calm somebody down.
No. And after he attempted to sexually abuse him, the boy ran off and told his mother about it. And she ended up telling the police. But this boy ended up not really cooperating, you know, and this isn't surprising because that's how things happen, don't they, Justin? This is, these issues are complicated. Some people feel ashamed, not that they should. I mean, this, you know, the authorities should know what happened, but it's not always so easy as, well, someone told someone and then the police got involved and they conducted these interviews. And I mean, something could have been done back then, but you know, people like Ryan can get away with it because what he does to people is terrifying. It's terrible.
I've read other reports about his childhood and how he would torture animals, mutilate their bodies, put their heads or body parts on stakes. And even later on in life, he had a dog that everyone that knew him said he beat all the time. So these are a lot of, I guess, red flags to me that there's something wrong with him. And he should not have passed any psychological evaluations that he was given, especially by this church.
Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Some of us spend our lives wishing we had more time, but time for what? If time was unlimited, what would you use it for? If you need to squeeze a special thing into your schedule, do you even know what's important to you and how to make that a priority? Well, with therapy, you can find out what matters to you so you can do more of it. We all need to vent sometimes. We all need to talk about some of the things that have happened to us. And I'll tell you right now, your friends might be sick of hearing about it. So take the burden off them. Let a professional help you. Sometimes it's as simple as just getting something off your back and letting somebody else know so you can feel validated and move on with your life. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/genY today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/genY.
What they discovered was that Ryan, when he was, I guess, being looked into at seminary, it was decided that he was not a sexual predator, but that maybe he had problems with impulse control. Does this surprise you that they're not that concerned? They're just like, you know, we'll get through this.
I wish it did surprise me. I wish I could say I was shocked, but no, it doesn't. And it's sad because that's not how it should be.
There were reports that he would go out drinking every night. This is in late 90s. And he was asked to undergo an alcoholism assessment, and he started attending Alcoholics Anonymous.
These aren't just allegations. These are other priests and his peers that are saying, he's wasted, and I want him out of my church. You need to transfer him. So it's not just people that are trying to backstab him. It's not just Rumorville. It's people saying, you need to move him away from me because he's a drunk.
And he was known for his use of firearms. He would kill rabbits, or if he was out with some boys fishing, he was known to take out his gun and shoot the fish.
He would spend all of his time around the teen or adolescent boys. And he would have these boys over to his house to watch R-rated movies and give them alcohol. It said on one of the retreats, they went out to a swimming retreat, and he was rubbing mud on a boy's back. I'm sure he was saying, hey, you're going to get sunburned. Let me put some mud on your back. But this is all just excuses and ways that, sorry, but pedophiles groom children.
So there's a lot of information here, a lot of evidence that Father Ryan Erickson is a person that should not be trusted.
What did the police find on his computer, Aaron? There were some really interesting details once they were able to confiscate his possessions.
On Father Ryan Erickson's computer, they found videos and pictures that, let's just say, indicated that he was a pedophile. There were young males engaged in intercourse, posing naked, masturbating, you name it. Lots of things like this. There were also post-it notes that were not written in his handwriting, but would say things like, I'm going over to the library through the computer lab. Be back as soon as possible. Try me on for size. I'm upstairs. Come up when you're through. Wear these, please. I'm up in my room. They also found evidence that he was racist, but I won't read the lyrics that he wrote out. But let's just say this is not a good guy. And it's one of those things where there were a lot of people who supported him because in the narrow view that they had of him, he was awesome. He was an incredible human being. He was charming. He was funny. He liked to play pranks, things like that. But it's the stuff he was doing outside of being a priest that when you look through the totality of it, it's horrific.
There's something that was pointed out to me, at least during this case, Aaron, that just stuck out to me, really. There was a debate on whether or not this father was gay or not. Like, that became a big point of debate between the congregation and some of his peers. And I'm thinking, mutilating animals, racism, molesting children, but we're going to be concerned about whether or not he was gay? That's the point that people take away from this. It was a little upsetting to me.
So let's get into the murders, Justin. We know that obviously Father Ryan Erickson is capable of this. He had committed many crimes, as far as we know. So what exactly happened? There was a Michael Swanby. He had testified at the hearing. And according to him, Father Ryan Erickson had told him that he and Dan had had a big argument the night before the murder. That's in his words. And on February 5th, the day of the murder, Dan had a meeting about insurance in Baldwin, Wisconsin. That's about an hour east of Hudson. And when he was leaving, he said, I've got a guy I have to meet in Hudson. And Dan ran into Mary Pagel, who was a St. Patrick's School bus driver at Walmart. And they had coffee together. And this is the key part. He asked her if she had ever seen Father Ryan Erickson inappropriately touch a child. Mary said she hadn't, and Dan asked her if the father was mostly with the boys or the girls, and she replied, well, he was mostly with the boys. He seemed to ignore the girls. Dan told her that he had a meeting around noon with Father Erickson, and Mary told him, don't meet with him alone. You need to go to the police. She said, Dan told me I can handle it.
If you know or have any information about sexual misconduct or any kind of crime such as this, please go to the police. Please report it. You should not take matters into your own hands. And a situation such as this is a great example as to why. Now, we're not 100% for sure that Father Ryan killed these two men, but let's just say that you just painted a pretty expansive motive and scenario leading up to this murder. They had an altercation. They had an argument, and then they end up dead. there's not a lot of other suspects that I would point the finger at in this case. So
can you find any other suspects? That's the real question.
Well, I guess there's those, you know, that other group that doesn't like embalming fluid.
Yeah, that's real strong. No, when you look at this case, it's a case of connecting the dots. And there's a timeline here. So let's go through it real quick. I want to make sure that people understand the amount of evidence that exists to point the finger at Father Ryan Erickson as being the best suspect in these murders, right? Mary said that 11:15 a.m., the day of the murders, she saw Father Ryan Erickson leave the rectory dressed in civilian clothes and saw him drive away in his Buick Regal. This all fits, right? Now, there was a witness who was outside the funeral home at about 1:15 in the afternoon, and he said that he saw a white male wearing a light t-shirt, blue pants, and a baseball cap. This person that he saw got into a white sedan. He said it could have been Father Ryan Erickson.
Father Ryan would end up getting rid of that car that he owned. You know, when patterns of behavior change after an event like this, that's very suspicious.
Right. So you have these interviews that were conducted by the detectives from the sheriff's office, and Father Ryan Erickson gave them information that only about 5 people knew, as well as the killer. It was never reported to the media. And of course, his story changed as to why he even knew that information later on. It's all deceitful. It's all, you know, very questionable. And then you go, you know, when they've collected all this evidence from his rectory, they found his computer. And there was this folder, and I want to talk about this folder. This folder on the computer was inside the My Pictures folder, and then within the Holy Mass prayers, and then a new folder. And inside there were sexual abuse imagery and videos, as well as, you know, other explicit content. And then you have all the witnesses that came out and talked about the sexual abuse allegations against him. Now, you can say the priest never got his day in court. Well, he didn't allow that. And he had told one of his friends that he would never want to face prison because he knew what would happen there. So if you're a detective, I think you're totally being reasonable looking at this priest as the murderer with the understanding that the priest didn't want to face any kind of judgment, any kind of prosecution for what he had done. He didn't want to take responsibility.
And I would not be offended if the investigation was closed and they decided this was the perpetrator of this crime. I understand why law enforcement would make that determination because there's no better suspect and the motive's there. The time and the opportunity and the means were all there. And then they find emails where Father Ryan is asking members of his congregation to give him an alibi for that date and time that the murders were committed. I mean, it's just so brazen. There's no question in my mind about who committed this murder because of this. But to really add insult to injury, Aaron, is the wife of Daniel. She had asked the church if somebody could come and pray with her at her home. And this church had pretty much ignored her. They did not want to support her. And what priest ended up showing up at her house to pray with her over her murdered husband?
It was Father Ryan Erickson, who was described as being emotionless.
Can you imagine that? Knowing after the fact that the murderer of your husband was the one that came to your house and prayed with you?
This is a case that lacks justice. Dan O'Connell's family, James Ellison's family, they went to Washington, D.C. in 2005 for the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. They wanted to see if there could be accountability because it was known back in the early 90s that Father Ryan Erickson had a problem, and it was a bishop who basically buried it. And they weren't entertained at all. You know, they came up with some ideas of what, you know, these bishops could do, but nothing was done with it. And there were some lawsuits filed by these families, but they were dismissed. The Ellison's family, when they submitted their lawsuit, it ended up being dismissed because the judge said the church did not have the information to predict that Ryan was capable of murder. So there's really no justice here. And that's the problem when you have a killer who has the power. He has the power to take lives, and then he has the power to remove himself from this earth and from the judgment of the authorities. The O'Connell Family Funeral Home erected a memorial peace garden in memory of Dan O'Connell. It's in front of the funeral home and has a plaque with a poem by Mike Miller, who was Dan's friend and classmate. And they say that this garden was designed for anyone who was mourning the loss of a loved one to find a place of peace and reflection. Never miss an episode of Generation Y. Subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, CastBox, or wherever you're listening right now. Also, be sure to follow us on social media. Our TikTok is at Gen Y Pod. Our Instagram is at Generation Y Podcast. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app to listen ad-free. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.